All right, you have before you the third story in Luke's Gospel leading us to the birth of Christ, and it is a story that is full of singing, but it's a story that connects the previous two stories we've looked at. 2 weeks ago, we saw Zechariah and Elizabeth. Elizabeth was old and barren, didn't look like she was going to have a child, but through God's intervention, she's able to have a child, and she's to name that child John, for he will be John the Baptist, forerunner of Messiah. This brings us the picture draws out great joy and delight because formerly she was humiliated and ashamed by the fact that she was barren in a culture where that was looked down upon. And then last week we saw Mary, the virgin, who's approached by the angel Gabriel and is told that she'll give birth to Messiah. And in light of that, her poor status will get worse because she will gain humiliation and shame. It's not taken away as with Elizabeth. With her, she'll actually be seen as someone who's sleeping around, as someone who's pregnant because she hasn't been faithful to her husband. And thus humiliation and shame will enter her life, and yet she says willingly, "Let it be to me according to your word." So those are our two previous stories, and they find a connection in this third story as these two women get together. It happens in this way. If you notice our first verse, Mary hears of Elizabeth's pregnancy, and so she set out and went with haste. So she goes as quickly as she can to meet Elizabeth. And when these two women finally meet, there is an explosion of joy. They are absolutely delighted to be in each other's presence. And the joy is so outrageous. It can't be contained in mere words. It has to turn into a musical. And that's why the second half of our story is structured in a way that Mary's singing. Mary is presenting a poem, the Magnificat, a song of praise and joy and delight. When I was growing up as a young boy, my favorite movies were all musicals. They were movies like Fiddler on the Roof, which I've probably seen dozens and dozens of times. Hair, which my dad took me to when I was a young boy. And my dad is so innocent. He had no idea that musical is really about LSD and hash and cocaine and sleeping around. And, you know, it's the hippie movement ensconced in a musical. He didn't know that. He didn't recognize it. So we're sitting around singing LSD and stuff like that, if you know the musical. We also watched Mary Poppins, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Sound of Music. All those I've seen dozens and dozens of times. But the memory that I'll take to the grave with me, Lord willing, if I'm able to think soundly until my demise, will be the memory of my father every Sunday morning as we got ready for church, would get his big stereo. You didn't get it back then. It just stayed in one place because stereos were big. And it had a big speaker and then a phonograph player. And he would put in this record. He'd hit it. And we would rock out to Jesus Christ Superstar every Sunday morning. And so we'd start at side one, and by the time we were ready to go, we usually at side four, and that means before church, I'd experienced this rock opera of incredibly creative music jamming out. He had the version where Ian Gillan from Deep Purple sang the main part of Jesus instead of Ted Neely, and Ian Gillan just can scream. It's just every morning I'd go to church thinking, I wish church music were like this, because that music really stuck with me so much that I'm not exaggerating when I say I've seen Jesus Christ Superstar probably hundreds of times. I know I've listened to the music thousands of times. I can probably quote every line in that musical. Musicals are fun, and they stick with us, and we can watch them again and again because they take you out of real life. They take you to a place where it's not just life as we know it, where you kind of do the next thing and sometimes it's boring and sometimes it's mundane and sometimes it's challenging. There is a melody that's playing, and I love that Monty Python clip because you get to see how strange it is that all of a sudden out of nowhere the orchestra swells and a melody begins. And you also get to see the curmudgeons among us who say, "Stop that! Stop that music!" Because, you know, we don't want to go outside of the norm and we want to just stay within, you know, I've got a castle I built on a swamp, it's the fourth one and you ought to be happy about that. There's something about Norbert, is that his name? Herbert? Herbert, who his dad calls Norbert? Alice, that's right, he calls him Alice. Of course, he calls his dad Mother in one place, so they obviously, their relationship's not that close. He's not excited about living in this mundane world. He wants to be in a place where there's a melody, where there's music, where there's a sense of transcendence, if you will. There's something about musicals where in the midst of the story, we're taken to special places because musicals don't happen in real life. The closest you get to a musical in real life is when people stage a flash mob. And they'll have a flash mob, but that's all staged. And yet there's something about that that causes us to watch those videos and say, wow, how exciting that is. Because all of a sudden, in the midst of the norm, music swells. And we discover there's a hidden joy even within a mall or even outside in a park, that there's something beautiful and magical going on. Well, musicals and music are important because you do know this. And if you don't know this, you ought to know this. One third of our Bible is poems. I mean, you just can look through all the parts where there's rhythmic structure and you'll find that a third of our Bible are songs, poems, prayers, things put to music, because to say something is one thing, but when you sing it, it's even more special. St. Augustine once said, "He who sings prays twice," which is a way to say you can pray and you can say, but singing it is like twice the effect, because all the emotion, the joy, the anger, the delight, the wonder, all of that comes through in song. And that's what's happening in our story. In the midst of the tragedies of Elizabeth's life and the humiliation and challenge of Mary's life, there is a song that arises, a song of redemption and deliverance, a song that's eternal because it connects to all God's promises of a coming kingdom and ultimately the promise of the coming Messiah. And Mary and Elizabeth are attuned enough to this underlying melody to hear it and to allow it to be expressed through their lives when the moment is right. And this is the right moment, this joy that explodes, and we want to wrestle with what that might mean for us. But to do that, let's go through the story part real quick, right before we get to the musical. In the beginning, you'll notice Mary goes with haste, and she takes an 80-mile trip from Nazareth to Judea. That's a long trip. It's a scary trip for a young woman to make on her own who is pregnant. But when she arrives, verse 41, Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting and the child leaped in her womb. Now this would be John the Baptist, 6 months pregnant she is. John, you know, does that bump. I've never felt it personally. I never will. I've felt my kids do it in my wife's belly, and it's odd. It's weird. But she felt that, and I can't help, because I've been a Wisconsinite now 10.5 years, when you read in verse 41, the child leaped. Yeah, how can you not think of the Lambeau leap? And the reason why that actually is not a bad connection to make is our beloved football team, when they do make points, which is wonderful, when they do make points, they celebrate because there's an overwhelming amount of joy and they make that leap. And that's the idea. There's a joy that can't be contained. So you just leap in joy and happiness because you've scored a point. Well, here, John the Baptist is leaping with a joy that can't be contained. In the womb, responding to Jesus, in whose presence he is before Jesus is even born. This causes such an emotional moment for Elizabeth that we read in the second sentence of verse 41, and Elizabeth was, and here's an important phrase, filled with the Holy Spirit. The gospel writers don't use that phrase without a real sense of what's going on here. The Holy Spirit's presence overwhelms her. She is now immediately speaking the words she says as inspired words, as if from the mouth of God. So what she's about to say is very, very important, because she is filled with God's Spirit and she exclaims with a loud cry, three blessings. She's just full of blessing. First one, blessed are you among women, Mary. Second, blessed is the fruit of your womb. And then if you go to verse 45, and blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord. Bless you, bless you, bless you, Mary. Protestants would do well to notice, filled with the Spirit, inspired by God, blessed are you among women. Blessed is the fruit of your womb. Blessed are you for your obedience. We just don't give Mary the credit for that because we're afraid we might sound too Catholic. I'm not, obviously. I'm not Catholic, but I'm not afraid to sound too Catholic. Anyway, there is such a great, great joy here, because when Mary hears that blessing, the blessing from the lips of Elizabeth, filled with the Spirit of God, the joy is so uncontainable that the only way to properly express it is in song. And so all of a sudden, our story goes from just an average story to a musical as Mary begins her wonderful impromptu delivery of the Magnificat. Now, Magnificat is the Latin word that scholars use to sound very smart, but all it is if you notice the first lines of her song, "My soul magnifies the Lord." That's Magnificat. The idea that magnification, of drawing attention to God. This set of verse has been constructed by so many people as songs. You can find so many versions of the Magnificat. Monastic people chant it. Cathedrals, they sing songs. Johann Sebastian Bach put a version of it to trumpets and kettle drums. And the reason why this song is so important is it hits every key of God's saving work. It hits it personally, it hits it publicly, and it hits it eternally. First, personally, if you notice the opening lines, Mary says, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior." If you go to the second line of verse 48, "Surely from now on all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me." And there's something about God's work in our lives, when we notice it, when we're aware of it, when we celebrate it, that has to be put in the joyous context of praise. God has done something, not just for people in general, but for me. God has worked in my life. My spirit rejoices. I have to respond in some way. But then Mary moves on, because if we're stuck here, we're stuck in a pietism where we just talk about Jesus and me. Because Mary knows that God's salvation has impact for the world. And thus, beginning at verse 51, she makes some very interesting statements coming from a humble peasant girl. Verse 51, "He has shown strength with his arm and scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He's brought down the powerful from the thrones and lifted up the lowly. He's filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty-handed." So that what God is doing is something that reverses the way our world works. We've only ever lived in a world where the powerful, the rich, the wealthy, and the proud are in power. Doesn't matter who it is or who you're for. That's the world we live in. In God's kingdom, the proud, the rich, the wealthy, the powerful are put in their proper place, equal with the humble and the poor and the weak and the powerless. So that there is a great reversal of things, and we find that God's kingdom is not about the kind of powers that we're aware of in human kingdoms. Those powers are upset and overturned as God brings down the high and mighty and lifts up the poor and the needy. So that's the kingdom that is coming, the kingdom that Mary celebrates. And she's able to celebrate this, and we're able to enter into this song because this is true for everyone. Verse 50. "His mercy is for those who fear Him from generation to generation." This is the song's way of saying Mary is connecting to the gospel that's been there from the beginning, that God's kingdom will come and God's king will come, and there will bring justice and compassion and mercy and all these things. Now that the kingdom is right on the edge and the Messiah is about to be born, Mary says, "For all generations, God has promised that the king that would sit upon the throne of David will rule forever." So she sees this as something to celebrate in future generations and not just in our own. Now here's the challenge of this song, and I hope you already have seen it. If you look at verse 51 and forward, it's all in the past tense. It's not "He will show strength," but "He has." It's not "He will scatter the proud," it is "He has." It's not "He will bring down the powerful from their thrones," but "He has." Are you following there? All of this is in past tense, and we know, those of us who live in the real world, where the music doesn't swell up out of nowhere, that that's not necessarily how things go. And yet Mary's able to sing this in the past tense, not simply because she trusts God's promise to be so sure that she can sing it in hope that knowing that one day it will be true, but she can put it in the past tense for one simple reason. And it's very obvious once you see it. When we consider what's going on in our story, there's no one rich, there's no one mighty, there's no one proud, there's no one that is, you know, has authority over everything. We are dealing with an old woman, formerly barren, and a young peasant girl. Humble, weak, powerless, and yet God's kingdom is coming in and through their obedience. God's kingdom is coming in and through their actions, through their submission to God's will, through their rejoicing in what God's doing. They are able to recognize that what God's doing in reversing the ways of the world has already begun in their own lives. And recognizing that, they look forward to it, or at least Mary does in her song, to the fact that what God has promised will come to full fruition. The God who can use a young peasant girl will bring about God's upside down kingdom to make the world right side up again. That's the song that's playing, the song of joy over the gospel of the kingdom. And the only question I have for you this morning is, do you hear it? Can you hear the melody? Do you hear the song? Or is it really distant? Or has it been eclipsed by the cacophony of all kinds of other, you know, songs praising might and power and riches and other such things? Is it a song that we can still hear? Is it a song that we find deep within? Is it a song that is ready to bubble to the surface at any moment when we understand that God's promises are true and the Messiah is almost here as we wait with longing for the coming of the Christ? We're going to talk about that just a bit before we're done, but we got to conclude this story because the music goes down. We go back to normal story, just like in musicals. You know, they have this drama and then someone sings and then they break out of it and we go back to the normal story. Well, in verse 56, here's the normal story, and it has celebration and sorrow. The celebration is, verse 56, Mary remained with Elizabeth about 3 months. Do the math, 3 months added to the 6 months of Elizabeth's pregnancy prior to Mary coming, and what you get is Mary is probably there for the birth of John the Baptist. And she gets to celebrate with Elizabeth and Zechariah this new life and a new beginning and the first action of the fulfillment of God's promises to bring a Messiah, because John is the forerunner. But there's also a note of sadness in this narrative. After the 3 months, and notice the last phrase, and then returned to her home. And you may not get this if you're not being astute to the text, but her home means her home, not Joseph's home. She's going to her home, which is probably her family's home. She probably lives with her family. And we're realizing that there's a bit of strain and sorrow because, you know, Joseph's got to come to believe that Mary's had this, you know, conception that's divine. And so this hasn't happened yet, and Mary still has to deal with her own shame and sorrow and humiliation and embarrassment. And so she goes back to her home, back like we all will today, to the same old humdrum, the same old world, the same old news stories. Gosh, in just the last 24 hours, there have been devastating news stories about hurt and horror around the world. I mean, we were going back into that world where we wait for the Messiah, which is why I find this text to be so encouraging. Because Advent is 4 weeks that the church puts at the beginning of the new year. 4 weeks devoted to what? One word. You know the word. What do we do during Advent? Wait. That's the word. Not an exciting word, but it's the word. What do we do in our waiting? Well, we all know we're such an instant society that we are not fans of waiting. Waiting is not something we like to do. We curse waiting. We despise waiting. And when we're forced to, at the beginning of the church year, hurry up and wait, there's a sense in which we say, 4 weeks, let's talk about Christmas already. Let's get to the fun stuff, because waiting is dull and droll and difficult and challenging. It's not exciting. There's no joy in waiting unless you're an expectant mother. Then you realize the waiting is a waiting that is waiting with joy, because what is coming is new life and new beginning. And all the challenges of waiting are worth it when you think of what the end result will be. What better picture of waiting can you ever give than two expectant mothers rejoicing over the fact that they're about to give birth to the beginning of the fulfillment of all God's promises for God's sacred people? These women who feel the child stirring within them, looking forward with wonder and joy, they invite us to wait with joy. They invite us to recognize that there's a song that's playing that they have connected to, that Advent is meant to not just be this dreary waiting, it's meant to be a musical. It is waiting with joy. It is waiting with the sense that there's a song that's always been playing and always will be playing that is there if we're able to hear it. Underlying all the noise and tragedy and sorrows, it's God's song of redemption, celebrated throughout the Old Testament again and again, finally coming to fulfillment in this story, the song of deliverance and salvation, the eternal song of joy. And if our ears are open, perhaps we begin to hear the orchestra swell and we see the melody or hear the melody that's playing. And if we're really in tune, perhaps we begin to sing and dance along. This is what's happening in our story. And I think this is intentional. Luke begins with a musical because he wants to end with a musical. By the time you're done with Luke, you realize it's been about joy from the beginning. These two women with joy, the angels in chapter 2, behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be to all people. And then you come to the final verses of Luke after they have seen the risen Christ. The disciples worshipped him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy. And how did they express that joy? They were continually in the temple blessed. God. They express it in song. How else can you express it corporately than to take the song of praise, the song that's always been playing, and speak of God's redemption and sing joyfully in order to, if you will, sing in the rain? That's what we're called to do this Advent season. As we wait, it's not dreary, it's not joyless. It is an attempt to try to prepare our hearts by hearing anew the song of redemption and deliverance, the salvation of the weak and the lowly and the humble that is always playing but is often drowned out by other songs that want to pretend to be gospel. My prayer for us this year is that we would not only hear this song of Advent, that it would bring joy to our hearts and even cause us to sing, maybe dance. Would you pray with me?